If you like YouTube, you'll love YouTube Premium. Hi, I'm Sean Evans from Hot Ones, and I want to tell you about YouTube Premium. It has offline downloads, so you can watch without Wi-Fi. Background play, so you can lock your phone, and it still plays, baby. Oh, and it is completely ad-free. Yes, I said it, ad-free. Try YouTube Premium for 2 months free at youtube.com/premium. Trial eligibility varies. Terms apply. Cancel anytime.
Bite into a stacked sandwich made with Hero Bread. And the only thing you'll think is, delicious. You won't think it has up to 19 grams protein, 11 to 32 grams of fiber, or just 0 to 5 grams net carbs. But it does. Hero Bread. No compromises, just loaves, buns, tortillas, bagels, and noodles packed with flavor. Right now, get 10% off at hero.co with code IHEART. That's hero.co, code IHEART. All figures per serving of Hero Bread. See nutrition facts on hero.co.
Hello and welcome to Politics War Room with James Carville, and I'm Al Hunt. This week, our guests are the congressional candidate in the Florida 7th District, Bale Dalton, a former naval aviator and chief of staff at NASA, and Jimmy Bierman, a Fairfax County, Virginia counselor who is an expert on data centers. Now, remember, we love taking your questions, so write to politicswarroom@gmail.com or email us for next week's show. We'll get to as many as we can, but don't forget to tell us where you're from. You can also get text updates about what's next for Politicon and Politics War Room by signing up at politicon.com. So tell your friends about us and remind them to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And please check out the link to our sponsors, HERS, WL, in our episode show notes. We thank you for supporting our sponsors because it really helps make this podcast happen. James, it's time to pull out your attendance book because the Trump Republicans are having a mini convention in Dallas next week. And we want to know how many Republicans in competitive races want to go and embrace the MC Donald Trump 8 weeks before the election. Susan Collins may vote with Trump when it matters, but she's headed for the northernmost part of Maine, as far as she can get from Dallas. Michigan's candidate Mike Rogers and Ohio's John Husted say they're scheduled to go. Let's check and see if something really urgent prevents them from going, you know, a haircut appointment or a bargain day at Walmart's. And let's report next week on who was there and who was not there. One who will be there is Texas Attorney General and Senate candidate Ken Paxton. I really hope he's the keynote speaker. Posters everywhere. We all know about his indictments and his bribery charges and everything else. My favorite story, which was recycled this week, was he was going through a checkout line at a airport security. And someone had left a $1,000 fountain pen there. And Paxton looked to his left. He looked to his right. No one there. And he picked up and he pocketed the pen. So anyway, Ken, we'd love to hear from you next week. I think most every Republican in a tough race, Mike Lawler, the scandal-ridden Max Miller, Zach Nunn, Jan Kiggins, they're not going to be anywhere near Dallas next week. Trump still has clout in most primaries. MAGA's a huge part of the Republican base, but with 36% approval, his coattails are much smaller than the legendary Eisenhower jacket. He is a liability for many of these Republicans in tough races.
Well, I think you're right to start on this, and I think this should be blown up into a really, really big event. And I'm happy to hear that a lot of the news organizations are going to have a presence. I've been giving paid speeches since 1993, and I've never, ever been tempted to cancel one. And God damn it, I got to be at bail during that. I could not cancel it, but I wish I could put that thing off. I would love to go to that. And everybody that can should go, and you're right, we should take one. And who's there, who's not there? And so they're charging $88,400 for photo. I don't know how they came up with that number. And the admission, a ticket is $250,000. You could go to 10 U.S. Opens and sit courtside for what it'd take you to go to that fiasco. The mind can't quite get around what exactly they're up to, but thank God they're doing it. Oh my God, thank God they're doing it. We didn't need this to win, but it certainly helps.
It helps. You know, two other quick things. Speaker Mike Johnson said this was the most productive Congress since Harry Truman back in 1948. Speaker Johnson's expertise does not extend to history. That was the do-nothing Congress. Mike Johnson, I think you may be right. I think the parallels are very much there. The only thing you really passed that was big was the big, beautiful bill, which most Republicans are running away from. So, talk about this Congress a lot, Speaker Johnson, candidates out there, because it may not be as bad as talking about Trump at 36%, but it ain't going to be very good.
You know, I used to detest Mike Johnson. All right. I feel sorry for him. He is so in over his head. He's been so manipulated. He's been so beat up. He's been so exploited and hadn't even know it. And I think he's starting to break through. Now, the interesting thing, a friend of the show we've had him as a guest is doing something, is G. Elliot Morris. And he's going to say, he's doing an episode today, it says something that I've thought and other people have. Is Trump trying to lose? Okay, we know people lose elections, and most politicians kind of want to win. Does he really want to win? Does he care? I don't know. But, I mean, it's a question that's got to be asked. Because everything he does, we lost bad in 94, and people were, you know, Obama lost bad in 2010. But, I mean, they were trying. This guy, from every piece of evidence you see, he's actually trying to lose. I don't know, but I think there's going to be a question going forward that people are going to want answers to.
Let me bring up one more thing, then I'm going to turn to Pete Hegseth. But Ed Markey, 80 years old, wins a primary against a younger, aggressive candidate by 30 points yesterday, second time in 6 years that he's beaten a young, aggressive challenger. He ran to the left of his challenger. Two things I think it does not say. It doesn't say that age is not a problem. Ed Markey doesn't look or act like he's 80. And second of all, it's not a real big ideological win for the left. Two other Massachusetts representatives were challenged on the left, and they lost. The leftists lost. What it does say is that Ed Markey is just a hell of a good politician. And he's got six more years to show that.
Seth Moulton was not, I remember in like, I guess it was 16 when he first kind of bursted on the scene. And he was the man who was going to be president.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you watch the campaign, the guy actually ran as a first-class jerk. As opposed to saying, if I were advising him, I said, look, man, you know, so you got to give a tip of the hat to Senator Markey. He's been a fighter for a long time. But, you know, Massachusetts, you know, we need to have vigor. We have people in there. The combined age of Ed Markey and Elizabeth Warren has got to be 160.
Mm-hmm.
And he never hit his stride. He never gave a reason, of humane reason, as to why he needed to change. I mean, it was just like, they thought they were running this way because they saw a younger vote in Michigan and this and that. And they thought there was this kind of generational hunger out there. But younger people, I mean, they're certainly, a lot of them, particularly Democrats, are more to the left, but they don't like rudeness.
Right.
And Ed's been there for a long time. His wife, Susan Blumenthal, is a totally lovely lady. And, you know, I'll quiz myself, if I were in Massachusetts, I want to find myself a little bit open to a smart, intelligent, generational argument to make. He didn't make that. And he came across as just an ambitious little shit. And that's why he got beat by 30 points.
Yeah, yeah. James, Army Secretary Dan Driscoll resigned, citing irreconcilable differences with a tragically underqualified Defense Secretary, Pete Hegseth. I am no fan of Driscoll. He has presided over the politicalization and diminishment of the United States Military Academy, which is a disgrace. But he's right about Hegseth getting rid of some of our very best military officers, General Donahue and George and Admiral Franchetti, at a great cost. But Driscoll, here's what really gets me, James. Driscoll, in leaving, apparently told Trump that with under Hegseth, we were losing our best officers. Trump reportedly was surprised. In the middle of a war, depleting our munitions, not winning, huge cost, and losing our best military leaders, and the commander-in-chief is surprised? There's one reason, this is the case, there's many, but one reason is we have no national security advisor. There's no Brent Scowcroft or Jake Sullivan who might say, Mr. President, we have a problem. That's not the way it works in this administration. And some of the best military writers and analysts like Tom Nichols and Max Boot write that this is a total disaster, James. It really is.
It's like more than a disaster. We got to get General Ty Schedule here on. And a lot of the best stuff has happened in the military. The Army, for whatever reason, seems to be a particular target of this. And the one thing that people got to understand, you can fix the Justice Department. Don't think that. I mean, it's a screwed up place, but you can fix it. You can fix the HHS. You can fix Interior. You could even fix the State Department. When you lose the kind of institutional knowledge and experience that the armed forces are losing, and particularly the Army, it takes a generation to get that back. And I'm not surprised that he didn't know. I believe that Driscoll went and said, look, I'm leaving, and you got to understand they're running people out of here. And I think he's the first guy to actually tell that fat, stupid son of a bitch that. And what we need to do is pick up on these stories, and hopefully Tom Nichols and hopefully Max Boot, hopefully Jeff Goldberg unleashes the Atlantic on them. There's good reporters at the Times that need to be unleashed on them.
And the Wall Street Journal.
The Post, the Wall Street Journal. I mean, what's happening to the American military? It's terrible, but the ramifications and effects of this are long range.
And also for the politicians, Judy and my friend, Paul Anderson, who was a great CEO, said his favorite Carvillian quote this season is, there's so many Trump targets for Democrats, it's like a mosquito at a nudist colony. Well, the cost of living, corruption, Epstein are all front and center. But please, please don't look over the dismantling of our military during a tragic war.
Yeah, well, I think it's two things that are the corruption, and if you look at to some extent, Cavani gets away. The corruption stuff is completely front and center. I urge anybody to look at the UMass poll, which I think is an excellent poll. And it's breaking through. It's really breaking through. And at a point when the gun goes off for the 2028 Democratic nomination, the candidate that comes up with the most effective, simple, anti-corruption ideas is going to do very well. And I just am so big on this way. It's sort of implied that you got to pick between prosperity or corruption. Well, you can do both. You can breathe and swallow at the same time. It's a stupid argument that stupid people have. And it's become to almost accepted. Well, you got to take some corruption if you want some prosperity. No, you don't. Not at all. And we're just the tip of the iceberg. This is just what we know. Can you imagine what we're going to find out even next spring? I think I have a bigger issue. It's a huge issue right now. It's just going to continue to grow.
I agree. And it ought to be big in 28, but it ought to be big in 26, too. The next 9 weeks, every Democrat ought to be talking about that.
control your weight with hers.
I can't believe that anybody living in the country, you got to convince. But anybody who lost a lot of weight, yours truly being one of them, 40-something years ago, I think it helps you live longer, but boy, does it help you live better. It look better, feel better. Maintaining a healthy weight is one of the things that contributes to having a nice lifespan.
Right.
And
right.
If you have, modern medicine and technology have given us tools, and people that don't avail themselves to this kind of thing, you're missing a great opportunity in life. That's all I can tell you.
Yeah. You know, if you've been waiting for the right time to tackle your weight loss goals, this is it. HERS now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. The results are really incredible. It's an amazing and effective tool for you or those you care about. With Wegovy at HERS, you can lose up to 20% of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first ever GLP-1 pill for weight loss. That means no needles. Everything is 100% online, and HERS connects you with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door, no insurance necessary. Weight loss by HERS even goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, HERS makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget. If eligible, you'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Are you ready to reach your goals? Are you ready? Okay. Visit forhers.com/war room to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's FORHERS.com/war room. Again, forhers.com/war room. Weight loss by HERS is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com. The link is also in our show notes. James, our guest is Bale Dalton, a former naval aviator, former chief of staff at NASA, and the Democratic nominee for Florida's 7th Congressional District this fall. You know, welcome. Earlier, you called on the current congressman, Corey Mills, involved in one scandal after another, to resign. He didn't, but he was beaten in the primary by a television anchor man, Ryan Elijah. You think he'd have been better off running against the corrupt Mills?
Well, look, as a lifelong Floridian and a lifelong Democrat, I am very happy that the folks in Central Florida made their voices heard, that the type of corruption and the type of ethics problems and the type of just wanton disregard for actually being a representative of a district that we saw in Corey Mills is now going to end. But we should also remember this doesn't end until January, when the new Congress is sworn in. So anytime that I'm given the opportunity to continue to talk about Corey Mills, I talk about the fact that Congress has completely lost any capability it might have had to police itself, because someone like this, who has, you know, benefited from government contracts while a sitting congressman, has the dating violence and sexual assault allegations from him, and of course, as a veteran, and by the way, I'm still in the Navy Reserve, so 24 years and counting. But to have somebody, tell these tall tales about his military service while folks that have served with him, call into question these actions. I mean, it's just one thing after another. This guy's got no business being anywhere near Congress. He needs to be out. So I'm certainly glad that we do not face having another Corey Mills term in January. And, you know, we're ready now to take on, you know, the policy issues that the folks in Central Florida are most concerned about.
We're going to get to that in just a minute. Let me ask you this. Do you have an anti-corruption agenda in your campaign? Three or four things you would do to stamp out this pervasive corruption, which polls like Gallup and UMass show is just, you know, people overwhelmingly think this is a corrupt government.
Yeah, we absolutely do. This is something that we'll be rolling out publicly in the next couple of days. But what I've talked
about.
Give
us a little hint. Give us a hint.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I will. Yeah. Look, as you know, I've spent my whole life in public service, 24 years in the Navy and Navy Reserve supporting special operations. I worked for Bill Nelson doing veteran services and national defense policy when he was our senator here in Florida. And I helped lead NASA, the whole agency. And so I have seen in my public service throughout in different buckets, you know, the really negative effect that, you know, this corruption and grift through like sweetheart deals, single source contracting, these things have hurt me in the Navy. They certainly are something that we had tried to attack when I was a Senate staffer, and they've hurt us at NASA as well. And what I've heard from the doors from throughout our district is, you know, this is pretty much the second most thing behind affordability that people want attacked. And so, look, I've already commented that Congress has shown its inability to police itself. So, look, you know, insider trading, that is already illegal, but nobody's being held accountable for it. So let's ban individual stock trading for our elected officials. Let's ban the use of these prediction markets where we have people that have insider information in government that are betting, let's be clear about it, for or against America when they are putting their money on these things. Like, you know, Mr. Hunt, like in the Iran conflict, we had people making monetary bets on whether or not the Air Force F-15 pilot and weapons systems officer were going to make it home alive or not. That's not what we believe in here in America. And to see that was just a grotesque. So I think we need to eliminate staffers and elected officials being able to be on these prediction markets, which we know can drive decision making now. We see that people already using them as political polls to their own detriment most often. So I think that's something that, you know, we need to attack as well. And then, you know, look, this is something that folks have talked about for years and years, but this revolving door of lobbying, but also getting money out of our electoral process. I think these are things people can agree on. They just need people that are willing to put their money where their mouth is when it comes time to be a representative and get these things into law.
What are the differences between you and the man you're running against, Ryan Elijah?
Well, number one, I've already taken an oath to protect and defend this Constitution. I've done it a number of different times, both in the Navy and at NASA. You know, when our country has been facing troubled times and needed folks to go defend us from a terrorist threat abroad, I was there. I did that. I served in combat. I led in combat. You know, when it came time to try to do public service in a different way, again, I put myself out there to try to make sure that our Florida veterans were getting, you know, the care that they needed and the benefits that they earned. And, you know, again, and at NASA, you know, took on as, you know, the number four executive leader in the entire agency, the really tough job of getting 14 different centers throughout 12 different states, you know, working together to actually accomplish things.
You know, I think that's all very admirable, but it doesn't address people who are having trouble, you know, putting food on the table, getting health insurance, paying for gas. And are there differences there, or are you guys pretty much in sync on those issues?
The differences could not be more stark, Mr. Hunt. You know, Ryan Elijah has said that the economy is in a great spot right now. He has said the tariffs are working. He has said that he supports the war in Iran as it's being run currently. And, you know, he is also an election denier. So I think one of these things you have is you've got somebody who's put on a persona for his whole life by being, you know, a teleprompter reader on local news that's now trying to just ride on the coattails of being part of the cool kids club by aligning himself with those in power right now in the Republican Party. And I think folks have seen, and certainly the folks I have talked to, they are finished with the status quo. It doesn't matter whose name is on the rubber stamp. they don't want another rubber stamp. And what they'll have in me is an actual fighter who is born and raised here in Central Florida and who actually cares about trying to solve these problems that they're facing every day.
Let me ask you one more question, then turn it over to James. I think the perception for a long time has been the military is more Republican, more conservative. Yet on this podcast, just this summer, we have had a number of decorated veterans, Kate Conley in New York, special ops, 16 years in the Army, Joanne Mendoza, an Arizona Marine drill sergeant, Rebecca Bennett, New Jersey, a Navy helicopter pilot, and last week, Elaine Luria, who commanded a ship in the Navy, and now you. It really is very much like 2018. Can you explain why is this?
Well, I think this, all the folks that you've named, I've gotten a chance to chat with on this adventure and another form of public service. And I think what we've seen here is people that have put their self, their career, their life, their family on the line for public service to this country are seeing that we are in, an existential moment in our country's future and are stepping up once again to serve the public in another way. And each of those folks that you mentioned and myself, we've had different types of experience in the military. I was very operational. I was, in combat most of my deployments, in Iraq and Afghanistan, supporting special operations. But I think what each of us have learned is when you want to be a good leader, it does not matter, if folks are a Democrat, Republican, Independent, folks want their needs taken care of. And good leaders in the military know how to do that. We're not only are we taking care of our folks, training them, getting them ready for combat, getting them ready for austere conditions, but also making sure that their families are taken care of in case of the worst. And right now, I think we're, especially in our economic condition, we're in a case of the worst, and people want leadership that has experience in dealing with those tough times.
James Carville.
Well, first of all, the one thing that you said that makes me highly respect, and that you work for Senator Bill Nelson, who is one of the finest people I've ever known in politics. And the fact that you are associated with Senator Nelson speaks volumes of your integrity. So let me be very clear about that.
Well, thank you for the...
The 7th District is Central Florida. Okay, let's straddle this target. What will we know? Give us some landmarks in the 7th District that we would know generally so we can get a reference point here.
Yeah, absolutely. We don't have like a major Florida city in District 7. Okay. The easiest way to think about it is it's basically all the land in between Orlando and Daytona, including either of those cities. So
are the villages in your district?
No, sir. They're west in District 11.
Okay. So they're not. But you're that great. But you're the eastern Orlando suburbs to Daytona, right?
Yeah, we have like the I-4 corridor, which is the west side, which is Seminole County from Orlando up to Orange City. And then we go all the way out to the Atlantic coast from Port Orange, which is just south of Daytona, down to New Smyrna and Volusia.
So what kind of aircraft do you pilot in the Navy?
I flew the H-60, the HH-60 Hotel Rescue Hawk and the MH-60 Sierra Seahawk.
All right. And you're still in the Navy Reserve, right?
Yes, sir. That's right. I lead the Naval and Amphibious Liaison Element out of Fleet Forces.
We've had all of these veterans. Al pointed this out. We're having a show. We're going to continue to have them. What provoked you to do this? I mean, you're a naval officer, you have a good life, and you live in a nice part of the world, it's a great climate. And what did you say? Shit, I'm just going to go out and take a chance on humiliating myself and going to, what people think is the most dysfunctional, crazy place in the world, Washington, D.C. what put you over the top to do this?
Well, I appreciate that. I see this as a joke, but it's a thing that actually happened. I had a couple of friends ask me during different parts of my life, have you ever thought about running for Congress? And I was like, hey, you're my friend. Why are you advocating that I go out and ruin my life? I'll tell you, Mr. Carville, I think one of the things for me, I was born and raised here in this district. So this is honestly, for me, it is a labor of love. It is a mission for the love of my friends and family and neighbors who have just had to deal with terrible representation up in the federal government up to this point. And folks that just seem to, again, they want to They want to go to D.C. to be a part of this cool kids club or be close to power or have clout, or they think it's going to improve their stature or their fame, you know, as somebody who's an elected official. And I'm sick and tired of that. I mean, you said it on your show, what, last week or 2 weeks? You know, I'm sick and tired of being sick and tired. And, you know, I have lived a life in which I've seen only a couple of bright spots when it comes to our political leadership. I'm 46 years old, so, you know, a week or two younger than the two of you guys. But, you know, there haven't been that many bright spots outside. You caught that, Mr. Hunt. You know,
you could swear your age and you'll still be younger.
I try to be deferential. But yeah, I mean, look, Mr. Carville, that's the thing, right? Is if we, it is an untenable environment that we're in right now. And unless people take it upon themselves to get into the arena, it's going to stay like that. And the last thing that I'll say on that, you know, look, when we were growing up, my mother gave us birthday verses out of the Bible, right? So my birthday is June 8th. So my two verses are Isaiah 6:8, a voice of the Lord rang out and said, "Who will go for us?" And I replied, "Here am I, send me." This is a verse that basically decided everything in my life, from going to the Naval Academy, from, you know, selecting special operations, to serving with Senator Nelson, to being at NASA, and to doing this. Send me. And I think that I've been blessed with the life experiences and the upbringing, which would make me good at the job, as much as it is a struggle to actually get the job.
So I want to ask you about two people who I am huge admirers of. One is Congressman Jason Crow, who is the head of the Democratic Campaign Committee. Has Jason, do you feel like you're getting the kind of support you need from and Jason, by the way, is a decorated Army Ranger, okay? He's a real star. Do you feel like you're getting the kind of support from Jason's group that you need to be successful for it?
Yes, sir. Yes. Jason has been great. You know, he was part of the group that originally reached out to me after I declared a run for Congress. And so he has been very communicative and celebrating our campaign, again, as somebody who I think wants to do what he has done, which is translate those leadership lessons and that sense of service from the armed services into, you know, representing his home in Colorado. And I'm trying to do the same here in Florida.
Hint. If they try to say, tie you to the National Democratic Party, say, you can tie me to Jason Crow anytime you want to.
Yes, sir. Having flown some Rangers around in Iraq and serving within Afghanistan, worry about I'm very happy to do that.
Another person who I've come to know and have come to greatly admire, just not just as a person and like his wife a lot, but is also his political skills, is David Jolly. David is a Democratic candidate for governor of Florida. How do you feel about being on the same ticket with David?
I feel good about it. I first met David Jolly when he was a Republican representative from the Tampa St. Pete area, and I was working with Senator Nelson. So obviously we worked together with the Florida delegation, regardless of Republican, Democrat, or how folks got there. And he was always a great partner in trying to decide what the best things that we could do at the federal government level were for, you know, our Floridians. He was a great partner, and so was his staff when I was working on veteran services during a pretty difficult time for the VA in 2014 and 2015. And we've been in contact here in Florida as well. And, you know, I think folks will see, you know, some similarities between myself, my upbringing, and the message that I'm trying to bring authentically to the folks of District 7 that he's trying to do statewide.
As far as turnover, I want to ask one other question. I hear from a number of people, by the way, my wife and I, we have a place in Sarasota, which is, you know, West Coast Florida. Go there. You know, my daughter lives there. She's getting married. Her boyfriend is parents live there, so we're very excited about that. But I keep hearing these rumors that Florida has really high insurance rates. Are people making this up, or does Florida actually have really high insurance rates?
People are not making it up, Mr. Carville. I think you know, I don't want to misspeak on the stats, but we are certainly in the top five of highest property insurance rates throughout the nation. And the problem here is that people are getting asked to pay more and more and more for monthly property insurance premiums, and they're getting less and less services. And so we're working, you know, this is a big question at the state level, as well as how we're going to solve this problem, because Florida has now started to see an exodus, especially of our retirees and veteran retirees, because the home that they wanted to make in their non-working years of retirement has now become too expensive across the board. And, you know, insurance and I would also say utility rates, which Florida has seen the highest percentage increase in its utility rates from one of our providers in the history of the United States of America. So, you know, this, you know, we talk about, you know, affordability. I don't really say the word because it is important to say the specifics that people are dealing with. And when you're talking about Florida, it's the same as nationally with gas and groceries. But our property insurance rates, our utility rates are going up exponentially. And then, you know, of course, we've got a huge health insurance problem here with the ACA subsidies having expired.
A little bit before I go back to Al, but the political consultant in me is, I don't much like the word affordability. I love the word cost. Okay,
people talk about that. It is a cost of living crisis. That's how I talk about it.
Things just cost too much.
Because
that's just the way that people communicate and think. And by the way, the cost of gasoline, 25% of it is attributable to the decision that one person made and every Republican in the United States supported. It's clear that gas is a dollar more expensive today than it would be without this idiotic Iran war and this 250-day jackass deployment. I mean, oh God, it makes me sick to think about
it. Well, let me pick up on that, and we haven't talked about it because it's a good issue, Jay. Do you and Mr. Elijah differ on the war in Iran and on Trump's tariffs too?
We differ on both of those things. So he has said that the tariffs are working, and I don't know what small business he's talking to in Central Florida, but I have not heard that from a single person in Seminole or Volusia County. I mean, our small businesses are getting squeezed on both ends with the tariffs, with raw good prices going up. They got to raise their prices. They lose customers, and now they can't keep the same number of employees on. You know, that is that cycle of despair that we have here in a district that's got a large number of small businesses.
And how about the war?
Yeah, with the Iran war, we could not be more different either. You know, again, this is a war of choice that has no briefed strategic goal. It has no briefed end state. You know, we've got folks that are going to be deployed on days, months, years on end with that. They're commanding officers of the ships and the, you know, the units like the 82nd Airborne that just got extended. They're not even getting any information about, you know, how to keep the morale up because there's no goal that's been said here. So I think that's a big problem. But also, like, look, we people, regardless of who they voted for president, they were voting for a government to be working more efficiently. It's not. They were voting for an economy that would be getting better. It's not. And they were voting for somebody who would be focused on our problems here domestically. And we're not doing it. I mean, this is yet another forever war that the political leadership has chosen to go into. And the political leadership at the Pentagon is running us right into the ground. And look, I don't want to make too many comparisons because we're not there yet in numbers, but I would have thought we've learned our lesson from having a government lie to us about casualty rates, about how these folks are dying, about how these folks are getting injured, leaving folks behind on undefended bases, refusing to tell us about the counterattacks and the damage that have been done to our bases and our allies and partners, which is what led to this supply chain issue for feeding our sailors on the Lincoln. I mean, this is an abject failure at this point, and the only thing that's going to solve it is a change in leadership. And the first time we can do that is in the Congress at midterm.
Let me ask just one final question and turn it back to James. You're a graduate of the Naval Academy, one of the great institutions in America. Trump and Hegseth have made major changes to the academy on admissions, on curricula, even the library. They've imposed their own woke views, if you will. What impact has this had on your cherished alma mater?
Yeah, well, I don't, you know, I'm down here in Florida, so I don't get to Annapolis that much. But, you know, when we talk about it in our alumni groups and with my classmates and folks, you know, that I was in squadrons with, I mean, again, regardless of Republican, Democrat, Independent, regardless of your political stripe, I think people are lamenting the fact that we've lost the independence of the service academies and being able to provide the education that they can. I mean, the nice thing, I mean, look, let me just brag on Navy, right? I don't know how they do it. The other service academies slightly less well than Annapolis does it, of course. But, you know, where else can you get, you know, incredibly hardcore engineering, mathematics degrees alongside, you know, liberal arts and political training and English? Like, we're all getting that all together. And the greatest part about that was the breadth of knowledge that we could have, the breadth of instructors, right? We have uniformed officers providing us ethics and leadership training, as well as, you know, at least when I was there, a civilian professor had to have a PhD in whatever they were teaching. So again, you have an institution which could provide this incredible education, and to take away any of the independence of what can be taught there, I think is a step in the wrong direction.
Well, I'm going to turn this back to James. I'm not going to mention who won the Army-Navy game last December. So, James, go ahead.
So, a few years ago, Florida voted on whether or not to raise the minimum wage. That's when it voted 2-1 for it. All right? Would you favor an increase in a minimum wage to $12.50 an hour?
Well, I would absolutely be in favor of an increase in the minimum wage. I think what Florida has done well here is that they worked with the business community, especially the small business community, in order to graduate that pay rise in so that folks could plan for it, you know, in their expenses. And so I think that, in my opinion, that would be the way to do it, to you know, find some compromise to figure out how to get this to, you know,
step
together.
Step it up. What
yeah,
you're
exactly. But I mean, Let's be frank, you know, a federal minimum wage of $7 and a quarter, you know, that's not letting anybody live or have any sort of momentum towards the American
statement.
Dream.
More than an economic statement, I think it is a statement as how we value work. I think it goes on morality. And you can say, well, you know, you can, you know, some people from Seattle has what they do, and but that's fine. But, you know, I when I look at wages here, and particularly the minimum wage, and I know not it doesn't affect that many workers, but it affects pay scales. There's just a morality. What you pay people is also a question of morality.
Well, I totally agree with you, Mr. Garble. It's one of those things where if we're going to lament the fact that America doesn't make things anymore, then why are we continuing to pay the folks that do the hardest work, that do the manual labor, you know, that are putting, you know, the welds and bolts on the rockets before they go into space? I don't understand why we're not paying those folks a fair wage.
Well, I'll tell you what America's making right now is we're making some great goddamn congressional candidates, and you make great congressional candidates, then you're going to make great policy, then you're going to start making things again. Thank you so much for subjecting yourself to such blistering questions as how do you like Jason Crow and David Jolly? Do you think people make enough money but our insurance? But we're here to ask the tough questions. No, thank you so much for running, for putting yourself out here, spending time with us. We appreciate
and
it.
And also acknowledging how young we are. Well, sort of, anyway.
Hey, we're closer in age, you know, than you gotta do different math there. But
that's the first wrong answer you've given all day.
Well, let me correct it with a quick shout out, Mr. Hunt, Mr. Carville. Thank you so much for having me. Thank you for spending all this time you do with the candidates. And if folks that are listening to your show want to learn more about me and our campaign, it's just my name, BaleDalton.com. You can make a contribution there or sign up, do some phone calls for us as well.
If you like YouTube, you'll love YouTube Premium. It's destroying athlete, creator, and YouTube maxer. YouTube Premium enhances how I use YouTube with awesome features like offline downloads, so I can download my favorite training videos before I hit the gym. So no Wi-Fi doesn't turn leg day into loading day. Plus, I get ad-free videos, background play, and so much more. YouTube Premium is like YouTube got some extra gains. Try YouTube Premium for 2 months free at youtube.com/premium.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Haley Bailey. Okay, I need to tell you about something. I just got YouTube Premium. It's got tons of awesome features like offline downloads, so I can download my favorite videos before I travel and watch them whenever I don't have Wi-Fi. Because we all know airplane Wi-Fi is the worst. I get ad-free, I get background play, and there's like a ton more in there. You should try it. If you like YouTube, you'll love YouTube Premium. So try YouTube Premium for 2 months free at youtube.com/premium. Trial eligibility varies. Terms apply. Cancel anytime. That's a mouthful.
Bite into a stacked sandwich made with Hero Bread or a fully loaded bagel. And the only thing you'll think is, delicious. You won't think it's up to 19 grams of protein, but it is. You wouldn't believe it has 11 to 32 grams of fiber, but it does. Hero Bread makes loaves, buns, tortillas, bagels, and noodles packed with taste, but without all the net carbs. We're talking 0 to 5 grams net carbs per serving. With Hero Bread, there are no compromises, just flavor. There's none of the stiff baked goods you'd expect from better-for-you brands. There's just the soft, fluffy bread you crave. Plus, small batch drops of indulgent favorites, like the popular 2-gram net carb Hero Croissant and 3-gram net carb Hero Pain au Chocolat. And right now, Hero Bread is offering 10% off your order. Go to hero.co and use code IHEART at checkout. That's code IHEART at hero.co. All figures per serving of Hero Bread. See nutrition facts on hero.co.
All right, James, our guest is Jimmy Berman, distinguished graduate of Stanford Law School, clerk, a litigator, but more important, he is a Fairfax County supervisor. Northern Virginia is the data center capital, not just of the United States, but maybe of the world. And this issue is starting to roil American politics. So, Supervisor Berman, you've dealt with this. Kind of tell us the pros and cons. I mean, the people who are pro from Donald Trump on down say this is the future. This is our economy. Those people who are opposed saying it's going to raise your electric rates, it's environmentally unsound, it's a ripoff for a bunch of oligarchs. So explain it to us.
Yeah, so thank you for having me on. And here's how I would frame it. I would frame this whole thing as we have a problem. And what's our problem? On the one hand, everybody loves data. We all use our cell phones. If you're listening to this, you're probably listening to a podcast on your cell phone. We're all on our computers. We're on the internet all the time. And as that's happening, as we have an expansion in cloud computing, as we have a boom in artificial intelligence, we need somewhere to run that data. And right now we're being told that's through these big server farms, these data centers, and that we need to expand capacity. That's part of the problem. But then there's a problem in the opposite direction, which is that these massive server farms use a ton of electricity. They use water. They aren't great to look at. They sometimes have a little bit of a hum sound to them, especially if they're running backup generators. And they're all associated with technology that on the one hand is something we all use, but on the other hand really isn't. And what I mean by that is, yes, we all loved our Google searches, our traditional Google searches. But if you're telling me it's all about having more ChatGPT, that's not actually something that a lot of people love right now. We've got situations in which the companies that are behind some of this growth in AI, in data centers, and otherwise are frankly represented by some of the world historic villains of the day. People do not like this stuff. And so the idea that you would just have untrammeled data center expansion is something that people don't like. Now, going back again to what you were saying in the quote unquote pro side, yes, these data centers generate a ton of local tax revenue. I'm in Fairfax County, right to my neighbor, Loudoun County, which is the data center capital of the world, has a tax rate that's about 32 cents less than ours. Yes, they create construction jobs. Yes, they create jobs that are related to the tech industry that people are tying directly to data centers. So there is that going on as well. But on the other hand, when people see their electricity rates rising, when they see the need for new transmission lines to support these data centers, when they're worried about water usage, they just don't like the things. And what they want, I believe, is for the data centers to pay their fair share, to ensure that they are not causing your electricity bills to just skyrocket, to ensure that what the data centers are doing are not harming your environment, it's not hurting your drinking water, and to ensure that these data centers, which, as you said, are the products of oligarchs and really, really rich people aren't being propagated in a way that screws you. So I think that's kind of where we're at. And what we're seeing around the country is a pushback and a push at lots of state levels to try and make sure, again, what I said really fundamentally, data centers pay their fair share. In Virginia, we just put in a data center consumption tax. That was one of Governor Spanberger's initiatives in the last budget. If you look at what Josh Shapiro just put out, he said data centers need to match his grid, his requirements on environmental protection, on paying back into the grid, his plan to get data centers paying their share.
But let's talk about Fairfax County, because sure. You mentioned land, but you have a bunch of data centers in Fairfax too, I believe. And what has that experience been on taxes, on jobs, on the environment, on noise?
Yeah, so we have right now, we have, I believe it's 20 operable data centers. And look, right. The experience is interesting because we've actually had data centers in Fairfax County for a long time, back to the 50s, when there was a company in Langley, Virginia, that started with the first data center in existence. And we've had data centers right at the heart of Tyson's Corner, where the internet started along with Al Gore. But we have had these around for a long time, and we have seen some come in and be built more recently. As I said, we've got 20 existing and about 11 under construction and about a 10 that are under review. Right now, data centers in Fairfax County produce about $110 million in tax revenue a year. Compare that to Loudoun County, where they produce $1.3 billion in tax revenue. And sure, we've got people who are angry about data centers, and we've also got people who come to our public meetings and say they want their taxes to be lower and they want to see more data centers. So we've had a debate here in the county that has gone in both directions. One thing we did about 2 years ago is we changed our data center zoning ordinance. We put in new rules around data centers. We actually put in a zoning ordinance that made it more restrictive so that you couldn't build by right data centers in certain industrial areas. We put in longer setback requirements. We talked about the noise ordinance. We tried to put in place those restrictions. At the same time, we later then updated our comprehensive plan to the comprehensive plan is more of a generalized guide so that if somebody was coming in for a rezoning, we could ask for the use of certain types of generators, for instance. We could also ask that we had a situation where data centers were using the newest available technology to try and cut down on environmental issues. At the same time, I think people are still, frankly, annoyed. They don't necessarily love data centers. They want to see more environmental restrictions on them. That's why we talked just yesterday at our legislative committee meeting about supporting more bills that go before Richmond when it comes to getting more information on how data centers are using power and water, to requiring that data centers pay for more updates to the grid. Those are frankly two things that happened in the last session that I think our Fairfax County folks all supported. One was getting more information on water usage, and then again, stuff about updates to the grid. And actually, the State Corporation Commission has said that Dominion has to pay for any updates to the grid that are due to data centers themselves. So, it's tough being at my level. I'm arguably at the low end of the totem pole, so to speak, with respect to what we can do at the Board of Supervisors level. And then there's the General Assembly, then there's governor. But we're very supportive of, again, trying to find ways to make sure that these things pay their fair share, while also understanding that there are real needs out there to continue having data. And frankly, what I'd like to see is sort of a whole of government effort to tackle AI at the same time, because I think that's animating a lot of the anger that's going on here, and making sure that these companies are giving more back to society than they're taking away from it.
James Carville.
So Jimmy, I just experienced it. I'm in Shenandoah County.
Yes, sir.
Which is one of the prettier places in Shenandoah Valley, first place in the United States. And I was in Middletown, Virginia, which is exactly 15.1 miles north of me because I know it. And there's a like a restaurant, a catering guy I go to there. And across the street, I noticed, and it'd been there for a while, this huge building. I don't know how I got it. I can't do square feet, 200,000 square feet, and cars parked everywhere. And I asked the guy, what is that thing over there? He said, that's a data center. Mm-hmm. I said, holy shit. But it has affected my life. Why am I supposed to hate that thing?
Well, look, if you lived right next to it, they do have a little bit of a hum to them. I also think they aren't that pretty. That was another thing we did. We tried to put in some rules around what data centers even look like. If you drive up Route 28, into Loudoun County and you see a bunch of these things, they're boxes without windows. So people don't like that. And the real reason why you might not like it, James, is because your utility bills might go up, or you might not like it because you're not happy with the AI slop that you read on your phone, or maybe you're not happy because where that big building was, there was some green space and you just don't like what it looks like. And by the way, that's part and parcel of local land use. That's what we deal with all the time.
The building wasn't, but I mean, it wasn't beautiful. It's not, but I don't know if it's particularly ugly, but if you wanted to stop this, how would you stop it? I'm not a very technological person, but once the technology comes, it happens, the best you can do is try to effectively ride it or control it, isn't it?
Well, I think that's right. And that's why I think that in a lot of places, Governor Shapiro, again, in Pennsylvania, introduced a bunch of different things with an executive order to try and hold data centers accountable, but he didn't call for a moratorium. David Crowley in Wisconsin, who just won the primary there on the Democratic side, did not immediately call for a moratorium or an end on all of these things. Governor Spanberger has not called for an end on all of these things. But you absolutely have to manage the problem. And then also, I actually think, again, it goes back to a whole of government effort to handle the new technology of AI and how that's affecting people's lives. And I say that in part because let's be clear. At one point, everything that was in this cell phone right here was in the size of a server farm, the size of this building, right? And then all of a sudden, over the years, the hardware kept going and getting better, and you could put more computing power into this thing. And I gotta say, when it comes to data centers, right now, you need acres, you need hundreds of thousands of square feet to have all of these servers going. But when the hardware catches up with the software, where are we gonna be? Because it's gonna catch up eventually with the software. Which, by the way, may in fact be something that we got to worry about 30 years from now. But I would love to see companies trying to figure out how they can shrink the footprint of their data center. And I believe the companies actually are doing that because they can make more money doing it that way. They're probably trying. But that's something that has people really mad and riled up because they don't want to be looking at these big buildings that took over all of their landscape and that they don't think they're getting much of a benefit out.
So I got to come straight back to Al. I'm going to ask you a question. I know Al's be very interested in it. Do you think the learners will ever spend money that we can get a relief pitch and get somebody out in the last three innings of a baseball game? I don't see any evidence that that's happening.
Well, look, Artie Moreno ran the Angels into the ground and just sold at, 22 times what he bought the Angels for? I don't know whether the learners are ever going to put money into this ball club. But they may be selling, they may not, but boy, do they need to put some money into the ball club.
Sell, baby, sell. I want to say to the learners, sell.
There you go. I mean,
the Angels have great climate. They got a great stadium, by the way.
And they had Mike Trout.
We're turning into the Angels of the National League after 2019. Yeah,
Jimmy, I know you have to go. So let me ask two very quick questions. One is the jobs argument. I don't quite understand this. I understand when you build a data center, it creates a lot of jobs, construction jobs and the like. Once it's built, it doesn't have a lot of people there, does it? I mean, it's not a big job supplier, is it?
Well, Yes and no. I mean, truthfully, it is considered a high yield land use because, let's say, you build a data center and you've got a number of permanent jobs, but you aren't necessarily creating a ton of school kids, because every time we put up a building, people say, well, might that overcrowd my school? You aren't creating a ton of school kids. Right. You aren't creating a ton of traffic day to day. You're not creating people going in and out of the building, a ton of those jobs. You are creating a ton of construction jobs while it's happening. But our data and the research that has been done on this says also that a lot of these companies, these AI companies, these tech-related companies, they are having more data centers and having more data processing power is a necessary prerequisite to those companies being successful. So, you know, we've got a ton of tech here in the Reston Corridor, in Tyson's Corner, in Herndon. We've got a ton of tech jobs around here that feel like they are being supported by the existence of data centers, the proliferation. I mean, 75% of the world's internet traffic runs through Loudoun County next door. If the internet traffic wasn't working, then we wouldn't have as many of those tech jobs. So the job stuff is, I'll put it this way, it's mixed, and on the construction side, it is pretty high. It is strong. There are lots of construction jobs.
James, you want to wrap this up?
All I can tell you is the one I saw in Middletown, I don't know how many people work there, but there are a lot of cars in the parking lot. Maybe they would just put them there, but it would fool me. But I don't, you know, but at any rate, I want these Democrats in Fairfax and Loudoun to think about sending checks to Beth Macy, who's running against Ben Klein. And it's a R+9 district, but it's the kind of thing that we can really come close in. And, you know, Beth's outstanding. She's from here in the valley. She wrote the book Dope Sick. She writes very, very eloquently about the problems that are being faced with in rural America and rural Virginia and West Virginia in particular. So I just want to put Beth on your radar screen. And I know we're going to get together again. Maybe go to another ball game, or I'll come by if y'all have a fundraiser. Tell Brandon to let me know. But I thank you so much for being on the show, and I'm sure we'll have you back, and you'll be our data center expert in residence.
Poor Jimmy, you're stuck with us. But anyway, you've been a really we've learned a lot. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
If you like YouTube, you'll love YouTube Premium. It's destroying athlete, creator, and YouTube maxer. YouTube Premium enhances how I use YouTube with awesome features like offline downloads, so I can download my favorite training videos before I hit the gym. So no Wi-Fi doesn't turn leg day into loading day. Plus, I get ad-free videos, background play, and so much more. YouTube Premium is like YouTube got some extra gains. Try YouTube Premium for 2 months free at youtube.com/premium.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Haley Bailey. Okay, I need to tell you about something. I just got YouTube Premium. It's got tons of awesome features like offline downloads, so I can download my favorite videos before I travel and watch them whenever I don't have Wi-Fi. Because we all know airplane Wi-Fi is the worst. I get ad-free, I get background play, and there's like a ton more in there. You should try it. If you like YouTube, you'll love YouTube Premium. So try YouTube Premium for 2 months free at youtube.com/premium. Trial eligibility varies. Terms apply. Cancel anytime. That's a mouthful.
Bite into a stacked sandwich made with Hero Bread or a fully loaded bagel. And the only thing you'll think is, delicious. You won't think it's up to 19 grams of protein, but it is. You wouldn't believe it has 11 to 32 grams of fiber, but it does. Hero Bread makes loaves, buns, tortillas, bagels, and noodles packed with taste, but without all the net carbs. We're talking 0 to 5 grams net carbs per serving. With Hero Bread, there are no compromises, just flavor. There's none of the stiff baked goods you'd expect from better-for-you brands. There's just the soft, fluffy bread you crave. Plus, small batch drops of indulgent favorites, like the popular 2-gram net carb Hero Croissant and 3-gram net carb Hero Pain au Chocolat. And right now, Hero Bread is offering 10% off your order. Go to hero.co and use code IHEART at checkout. That's code IHEART at hero.co. All figures per serving of Hero Bread. See nutrition facts on hero.co.
Thank you.
And now for the outrages of the week, James. It is like your proverbial mosquito at the nudist colony. It really is kind of hard to pick. But I'm going to go talk about one that's important and dear to me. Specific reporters from the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, and Bloomberg, three great news organizations, were barred from covering the G20 global economic meeting this week in North Carolina. Treasury Secretary Bessent insisted it, quote, has nothing to do with their point of view, end quote. Really? That's a lie. What else could it have been about? This administration is the most anti-press, anti-First Amendment ever. Trump brings frivolous defamation suits. They raid a reporter's home to confiscate her laptop, notes, and even smartwatch to try to find her sources. They insult and try to intimidate, especially women reporters, and they threaten to sick Trump's FCC hatchet man, Brendan Carr, on news organizations they don't like. Where are all those self-styled champions of free speech who were so incensed by the COVID-related election disinformation restrictions and during the Biden presidency? This is so much worse. Yet I hear very little from the likes of the Jonathan Turleys. Trump works from the totalitarian playbook. The only antidote is to stand up to the bully.
I mean, first of all, Jonathan Turley is a 100% fraud. So, well, and we all know that. See, yep. To me, and I'm going to the same thing, Asheville, North Carolina, the G20. Russia is an international rogue state. It invaded a sovereign nation. It threatens Western Europe every day. It is a totalitarian, corrupt, John McCain was right, it's a gas station masquerading in the country. Furthermore, it is helping Iran design missiles to kill American troops. That's right. You heard me correctly. They are trying to kill our people, and we, against the wishes, by the way, the other people wouldn't have anything to do with them. The corrupt, rogue government of the United States and Scott Bessent in his corrupt, stupid self and his even more corrupt and even more stupid president are inviting people who are killing our own people. Well, how did we ever get to this point? When a nation is at war, you hang people. Okay, I know that. I don't think Scott Bessent needs to be hung, but I don't know how these people get up in the morning. I don't know how they go back to their friends. I have no idea how you give comfort and solace to a country that is trying to kill your own soldiers or your own sailors. I don't get it. I never will get it.
You know, James, at the end of the G20, there is a tradition. There's a group picture, a group shot. The Europeans said, we're not going to be in it if the Russians are in it. That's it. You know, they had the courage to stand up, even if Trump and Bessent did not.
I couldn't agree more. And we have more. The Americans have a good, maybe better reason to not sit with these international criminals who are trying to kill our own people, who are designing weapons to kill U.S. soldiers, and we're giving them photo ops. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee. God help us.
Yeah. Hey, now for our listener questions, which, James, I swear they really get better almost every week, and they bring up some stuff that I at least have not thought about enough. So I want to start with our old friend Johnny in Gurnee, Illinois. And James and I have made a commitment that one of these days we're going to Gurnee, Illinois, John, because you're such a loyal listener. And John asks, what are the distinctions between independent candidates and those affiliated with the Democratic Party? Because there are a number of independents running this year that Democrats hope will win. Can you elaborate? Are there policy differences, or, you know, what's the difference, basically?
Well, First of all, that two, we have 47 in a Democratic caucus. Two are not Democrats. Bernie Sanders is not a Democrat. He is a member of the Socialist Party. Angus King is not a Democrat, or he doesn't run as a Democrat. He runs as an independent. They vote with the Democrats 97%. I mean, it's the old joke about a guy at the end of the bar and he grabs his chest and he keels over and he says, call me an ambulance, call me an ambulance, call me an ambulance. And the guy sitting next to him says, okay, you're an ambulance. I mean, call yourself what you want to. And these guys like in Montana or Nebraska or even Idaho, I don't care. Call yourself an independent. But all I care about is who you caucus with. And the Democratic Party has done well by having people who are not self-identified Democrats in his caucus. So let's, if we have three more, two more, one more, fine. I don't care.
Yeah. John in Chicago, that's distinct from Gurney, Illinois. John says, if Trump interferes with the upcoming elections, what will the recourse be for Democrats? The courts might make a ruling, but the DOJ won't support it. Our military won't step in. Is this a prelude to a civil war? John, that's a serious question. That's not something that can be easily dismissed. That's never happened in the last 150 years in American politics. It's different. I think the only answer to that, I think the, you know, the Democrats have to have the best lawyers working on this, but the only answer is a huge turnout, a massive, massive turnout, a massive victory that even friendly courts will have trouble ignoring.
So let's take a lapse and let's imagine what it's going to be like. And on the Wednesday after the election, all right, he's going to try everything. He's going to try to do that. And let's say you're a Republican. You hung on. You're from a R plus 11 district. Or you're a Republican senator or anything or an opinion maker. And you see how bad the party's beat. And you just want to get this behind you and get on with the next election. And he's going to keep dragging you. And by the way, people are like, I don't want to refight this battle. We've already decided this. And he's massive. He's going in with a 30, let's just say, be generous, he has a 34% approval now. One of the great parlor games is the date that you have two polls that have him below 30. I don't know. But some people say, well, it can't happen. It just can't go that low. Other people say, so we will dutifully report when we see two polls that have below a 30 approval. But it's going to be so hard to do that. And it's going to be really hard to do that under what the political conditions are going to be in mid-November of 2026. I know what happened on January 6th traumatized people. It traumatized me. We all thought it was going to be consequential. They'll never come back from this. Lo and behold, they came back. And then he gets the events in Butler, and he thinks he's divine. And the only people that think more that Trump is more divine than Trump himself are the Democrats. He's going to get the living shit kicked out of him, and it is going to change everything. It's going to change everything. It's going to change room temperature. It's going to change just the way people look at it, the way people look at the United States, the way they feel about themselves. This fist is coming and it's headed right for his jaw.
Well, Claire in Atlantic Highlands, New Jersey is not so sure. She says, good question. Can you explain why we should be so excited about a blue wave given how Trump has acted so far? His party controls everything, and yet he still ignores them. He declares war without congressional approval. He builds a ballroom without approval. He issues tariffs without approval. He appoints cronies without approval. Why won't it just be more of the same even with a Democratic Congress?
Because when you have the authority and intervention of an election, it makes it very difficult. And the Republican Party, for not all of them, but some are going to want to get on with this. They're going to want to move on to 28. They're going to want to fight bathroom legislation and track meat shit and all of the stuff that they prioritize. And this is going to dominate everything. And they're going to figure out that it is not in their interest anymore. Plus, he's 81-year-old fat old man who I'm not Dr. Ron or anything. You never tell me that guy didn't have coronary artery disease of some severity. And they're going to say, man, fuck him. He's not part of where we're going as a party or anything else. And they're going to change. You cannot, I come back at our good friend from New Jersey. We'll talk about it on the Wednesday after the election, but the whole world is going to change in early November. It's just going to change.
Claire, never underestimate the power and the importance of subpoena power. And I have no doubt that he will do exactly what you say he has done. It's going to be considerably harder. James, Mark in Chicago says, do you believe or ask, what are the two or three most important governor races this cycle? That's a really, really good question, Mark. I would say the most important, if I had to pick the two most important, it would be Ohio and Florida. They're important states. I think there's a chance Democrats could win both. And then there's kind of a package of a number that are important, Wisconsin, Iowa, Georgia. I think the Democrats, it is going to be a blue wave, and I think they're going to pick up net gain of four or five, half dozen good material seats. But at the top of my list would be Ohio and Florida.
Yeah, I'd add something. Texas is tied.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's tied. It just is. And the whole number across the board, the entire climate in Texas is entirely different. The Hinojosa is tied. And Paxson is, that's a headline race, a Senate race, maybe a little bit more than the governor's race. And the changes that are taking place in the Rio Grande Valley, you're right. We're commanding position in Florida and in Ohio, terribly important places. I think we're in way better shape in Texas than is currently appreciated because there's so many other things that are going on in the country. I really, really critical race.
Yeah.
There's some lesser races that, South Carolina, you doubt it, but it's worth taking a look at some point and checking back in. And the other thing that's watching, this is something that you're very big on, and we should ask, but I've heard, and I don't know, we need to check this out. There's a possibility as many as 600 state legislative seats changing hands. Man. We never got over the election of 2010.
We did not.
And what we got to make is 2026 to the Democrats with 2010 versus the Republicans. We were caught sleeping. I blame Obama for a lot of that. He didn't want to be
too
political, or whatever. Koch brothers and those horrific people in North Carolina, I mean, they changed everything. I mean, 2010 really had a profound effect on American politics for the next 10 years. We got to make 2026.
More. It still has a tremendous impact.
Yeah,
you're right.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm being modest, but okay. We got to turn that into it. Let's look and see how many of these legislatures, state legislatures, change who's in control of what in both houses or one or something like that. I think there'll be profound, profound consequences.
James, I love you, but modesty does not become you, really.
Okay.
All right. Justin in Kensington, Maryland, close by me, he said he's a registered Republican and he's repulsed by MAGA and Trump. And he wonders, though, why isn't there a coordinated effort from the Democrats to run ads nationally highlighting the blatant corruption of the Trump administration?
Oh, wow. A good question. One says, by the way, people know about it. The UMass Amherst poll is 90%. And they have identified that the corruption that they're talking about is in the executive branch. And I think one of the things, like people, like, some of our friends in Washington, like, all right, I won't say any names, but I'll give you the initials of one, is Fred Werthop. All right, people like that, that's what they spend their time doing. And I'm sure Fred, Scott, and other people have a standard, effective bill of ethics that they can put. And I think Democrats need to run on that, that we are aware that this is going on. We want to address it and we want to stop it. And I think the public is, I think the public is on, is way ahead of where the politicians are on how serious and how deep and how endemic this corruption is. I really do. I don't think politicians have caught up to the public on this one.
Yeah. Yeah. You're right. Nick in Billings, Montana. Nick, get that Senate race out there straight now. Will you please ask if John Ossoff's recent statement that he has no interest in running for president is a way to keep his powder dry to be a VP kick and pick in 2028 and then run in 2036 when he would just be under 50. You've planned too far ahead, Nick. First of all, John Ossoff is going to win. He's going to win, you know, by, I don't know, 5-7 points. But when you're in a semi-competitive or supposedly competitive Senate race, it's not a great idea to say, yeah, I've got my eye on another seat 2 years later. John Ossoff has probably done more for himself in this campaign year than any other Democrat that I know of. And he's now on the national radar screen. I think 2028, my guess is it's too early, but you know, you seize the moment and he's going to be a player.
I think John Ursula, I remember when he ran the first time and it was a congressional seat. I think it was a special.
It was a special.
And he, I'll say this about John, he is the most improved politician, man, I've seen him in a long time. I mean, he is and he's the hardest worker that you can imagine. And I am sure that one day Senator Ossoff will go in for president. And if he doesn't, it'll be for external things. And he's a very ambitious guy, which I very much admire somebody, by the way. But I don't think he will go in 2028. I mean, first of all, it's a slippery slope and it's a tough feel out there. It's probably not the most opportunistic time for him coming off of a first time reelect, but man, has this guy got a future, and he just handles his business beautifully.
Yep. Yep. Absolutely. James, our final question is from Philip in Birmingham, Alabama, who worries with far left Democrats are giving Republicans all the ammunition. He said in Alabama, they're already talking about people like El Saeed and Angie Nixon, and they're saying that Democrats want to abolish ICE, police prisons, etc. Is that a concern of yours?
It is a concern of mine, and some of these people are a little bit silly, but you know what? They're not criminals. That's what the people that supported the January 6th are. There's a difference between being naive and impractical and being a criminal. And some of the people that they blame Democrats for, I was on Fox yesterday, and they asked you about Hassan Piker. I said, there's two things I know about Hassan Piker. One, he's a fucking idiot, but everybody knows that. Second, he's not a Democrat. All right? He's not a Democrat. You know who's a Republican? David Duke. All right? You know who's a Republican? Nick Fuentes, or whoever they are. And we have people in our coalition that frankly say ridiculous things from time to time. Thank you. The person I've become to admire is AOC. All right, thank you. The whole woke shit was stupid. And we just got to say that. It was one of the really stupid things in the self-inflicted stupid things in politics. And it wasn't evil. It was naive and it was silly. It was just out and out silly. And I just give up on myself. I'll be able to go. They were not benign people. They were mean people. They were vicious people. Look what they did to James Bennett. Look what they did to Don O'Neill. Look what they did to David Shaw. These were some rotten-ass, mean, cruel, sinful people. A lot of them were. Not all of them. Some of them were just goofy-ass people. I thought they could change a dictionary. A lot of them were cruel, mean, short-sighted people who wanted to hurt other people. I can't stand the whole goddamn woke thing, and I congratulate AOC for having the good sense to know when she made a fuck up and she goes beyond it, and that's the most important thing to do.
Okay. Listen, we love those questions. We love those letters or emails. Please send them in. If we didn't get to yours this week, send it again, and we'll try to get to it next week. We have an incredibly smart, devoted audience out there, James. Hey, thanks for listening to Politics War Room with James Carville, and I'm Al Hunt. As always, send your questions for us by email to politicswarroom@gmail.com or tweet them for next week's show at Politicon. Following this episode, we'd really appreciate it if you check out the link to our sponsors, HERS, WL, and our episode show notes. We thank you for supporting them, because when you do, it helps make this podcast happen. Now, to keep up with us, subscribe to Politics War Room on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. And check out our Substack at politicswarroom.com. James and I are constantly adding new content, so go take a look. You also can find other shows you might enjoy on the Politicon YouTube channel or when you search Politicon on your favorite podcast sites. Remember, please rate the show with a 5-star review, and we'll be back next week with another show as we continue our War Room planning.
Hi, it's Kyle MacLachlan, host of the What Are We Even Doing podcast. You know, my favorite part of the morning is that first cup of coffee, a small, quiet ritual that sets the rhythm for my day. That's why I appreciate De'Longhi. For over 50 years, they've combined Italian craftsmanship and thoughtful design. And as the number one espresso machine brand in the world, they make it effortless. Just a damn fine cup of coffee in your own kitchen. Right now, you can save 10% off your purchase at De'Longhi.com with code Kyle at checkout. After all, if it's not Italian, is it even espresso?
Real value shows up in reliability you don't have to second guess. Like a set of Firestone all-season tires. They're designed to deliver confidence-inspiring wet weather traction and a quieter ride, no matter the road, season after season. Firestone all-season tires. For durability you can count on, just like people count on you. Firestone, always dependable since 1900.
There's a fire inside you you can't ignore. Stand still, not a chance. You're a lifelong learner who's come this far. Now we're here to help you keep going further. Capella University, what can't you do? Visit capella.edu to learn more.